Welcome, everyone, to the Q&A session for our upcoming course, Psyche and Cosmos, the 8-week journey into using archetypal astrology as a telescope into your depths. I'm Lisa Von Ees, and I'm really looking forward to this hour-long Q&A conversation for the Shift Network, where we'll explore the teachings of Drs. Stanislav Grof and Richard Tarnas, or Stan and Rick as we'll address them today, and address questions about their upcoming 8-week course, Psyche and Cosmos, which begins Tuesday, October 3rd. Later, I'll explain how you can participate in this course, even if you can't attend the live sessions, but first, I want to introduce our guests. Dr. Stanislav Grof is a clinical psychiatrist with over 60 years of experience in researching non-ordinary states of consciousness induced by psychedelic substances and by experiential psychotherapy. He's the author of numerous books and is one of the founders and chief theoreticians of transpersonal psychology and the founding president of the International Transpersonal Association, or ITA. He was formerly principal investigator in a psychedelic research program at the Psychiatric Research Institute in Prague, chief of psychiatric research at the Maryland Psychiatric Research Center, assistant professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University, School of Medicine, and scholar-in-residence at the Esalen Institute. Dr. Richard Tarnas is the founding director of the graduate program in philosophy, cosmology, and consciousness at the California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco. He teaches courses in archetypal studies, depth psychology, philosophy, cultural history, and religious evolution. Formerly the director of programs and education at Esalen Institute in Big Sur, he's a graduate of Harvard University and Saybrook Institute. His second book, Cosmos and Psyche, Intimations of a New Worldview, which you'll see right over my shoulder here, received the Book of the Year prize from the Scientific and Medical Network and is the basis for the upcoming documentary film, Changing of the Gods. In just a few minutes, we're going to open up for your questions, but first, I want to welcome Stan and Rick. It is so great to be with you on this fine Sunday. Welcome.
Thanks. Great to be having us.
Thank you.
Welcome,
Lisa.
To both of you. All right. Well, this is going to be, I think, a fascinating conversation because we've got lots of great questions already here. So we've got the rest of our time together to dive into the viewers' questions for Stan and Rick. And again, the name of the course is Psyche and Cosmos. It begins Tuesday, October 3rd. And if you want to check out the website and learn more about the 8-week course, you can visit psycheandcosmos.com. Three words, no spaces, psycheandcosmos.com to see the full description. So let's go ahead and get started with the questions. If you have a question for Stan and Rick, just go ahead and type them in and I'll be happy to read them aloud. And let's go ahead and get started with, I think, a really pretty good starter question. And that is from Alexandra, who says, I'm interested in taking the course, but I wonder if any prior knowledge in astrology and in-depth Jungian psychology is required.
I think I could answer that. Lisa, it's a good question, and Stan and I have actually presented seminars in our graduate institute here for many years, but also in other contexts where we do not presuppose that kind either of knowledge of astrology or of depth psychology. At the same time, if you do already have some, if you've already been initiated into the astrological perspective and vocabulary, it's helpful. I mean, you would certainly be able to take in the information with, you know, greater rapidity and depth. But it's not by any means necessary. We set out the relatively simple principles from the beginning, so that you can kind of build up your foundation and be able to fly with us right through the course. And the same thing is true of depth psychology. Stan will be presenting that the expanded understanding of the psyche that has come from so many sources, whether it's psychedelic therapy and holotropic breathwork, or the history of psychoanalysis and Jungian and archetypal psychology. So the presentation should take care of introducing everybody to the basics, and all it requires is an open mind and heart and alertness.
Okay, excellent. Sam, did you have anything to add to that, or should we go on to the next question?
No, I think Rick covered it pretty much.
Okay,
you know, much of what I was talking about is not part of traditional psychology. A lot of these are new discoveries, and so I will have to introduce people into it from the beginning.
Okay, all right, terrific. Let's go to a question from, my computer's slow at scrolling. There's no name on this one, so it's anonymous. And the question is, would you comment, please, on the archetypal influence now of the Aquarian age and feminine empowerment for shift to love and healing energies? Not just women, but the androgynous quality of male-female harmonizing.
I'd be happy to address that to begin with anyway, and that is... let me mainly focus on the masculine-feminine issue, because I really see it as central to our time, central inside the every individual psyche, a kind of healing process and transformational process that is taking place for every individual, woman and man, LGBTQ. In fact, I think that whole emergence of the latter constellation of orientations is part of this tremendous transformation we're going through. And I think there is an underlying dynamic process that we today, as a society, as a civilization, as a species, are undergoing, in which the masculine-feminine dynamic is integration, its resolution, its interplay is absolutely critical to understanding this transformation, and also to contribute to its potential success as a healing transformation that brings about a different relationship, not only between women and men and women's empowerment and the empowerment of aspects of the male psyche as well as the female psyche that have been suppressed in the course of patriarchy. And finally, in the human relationship to the larger Earth community, which has an overlap with that masculine-feminine dynamic. And I will, and we will be discussing it both in terms of our deeper understanding of the psyche, the archetypal psyche, the perinatal dimension of the unconscious is extremely important, to this issue, which Stan will be explicating, and so also in terms of the archetypal astrological symbolism of the solar and the lunar, and how we have both a solar feminine as well as a lunar feminine, and a solar masculine as well as a lunar masculine at work in the collective human psyche, and really in every individual as well. So yes, these are all very much essential. I wouldn't, getting back to the very first part of the question, while this may have something to do with the precession of the equinoxes and the Pisces to Aquarius shift, I am more seeing this. We'll be presenting this very much on its own terms, as well as in terms of the powerful archetypal forces that are at work in the world today, visible in the very issues that we're talking about, empowerment of women, and the kind of intensified, desperate last gasps of a certain type of patriarchal privilege and very problematic expressions of it that I don't need to go into right now, but I think everybody's deeply aware of. So these will very much be addressed in the course of the of our 8 weeks together.
Okay, fascinating. I can't wait to hear it. I've got a question here that perhaps Stan can answer because of his expertise in prenatal subject matter. This is from Emily, who wants to know, does being born by cesarean delivery particularly an elective time for the procedure because of the mother's prior cesarean delivery, can that have a particular impact on one's astrological configuration? Because labor never began, so neither the inner timing of the baby nor the outer astrological influences would have played a part.
Well, this probably would be, again, a question more for Rick. I know that we have seen that frequently the type of birth, whether it's a violent birth or whether it's birth with anesthetics, can be already reflected in the chart. It certainly has a great influence on how people experience holotropic breastwork, how they experience psychedelic sessions. The process looks completely different if the person was born elective cesarean or if they have been through birth, in particular difficult birth. We see numbers really completely different style. For example, when people are reliving vaginal births, energy is primarily in the head. There's a tendency to move forward or press against certain obstacles and pillows and so on. Whereas people who are reliving cesarean births are not showing that kind of a activity. But in many instances, they tell us that they have a feeling that they didn't experience birth the right way, that they were not born the right way, that they somehow missed the activity, they missed the experience that they freed themselves from the confinement of birth through their own force. In some instances, are asking us to create a confinement. Several people creating confinement, and they won't have the feeling, the experience of breaking through with their own force. Maybe from my own experience about the cesarean section, I would say that it would be wrong to imagine that cesarean section would solve the problem of the birth trauma. It's just a different kind of trauma. There are all kinds of positive aspects to vaginal birth. The individual has the feeling of being involved in strenuous activity and being able to complete it successfully leaves people with a sense of cellular optimism. The idea that if new problems come in life, they have already successfully mastered one and they are ready to confront others. Whereas if people don't have that experience, then they usually describe that they have problems in solving challenges in life. I don't know if Rick would like to say something more about the chart, how it reflects.
Sure. Let me add a couple things there. First, on the level of the birth chart, I have studied hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of birth charts of individuals who were born cesarean, as there are so many today. And I have to say there's no difference in the relevance, the efficacy of the birth chart, even though in the case of the elective cesarean situation that you brought up, there's been no labor, and it is a sudden surgical intervention and separation from the mother. It is that moment of separation, the first breath. These seem to be the crucial thresholds that are reflected in the birth chart and the state of the macrocosm, the planetary positions with respect to the Earth and that place on the Earth where the person is born. That definitely still seems to be completely relevant, and the personal transits to the birth chart unfold in ways that are just as intelligible and consistent as we find with the with natural childbirth. I want to just add one thing to what Stan was saying about the some of the psychological and biographical dimensions of the elective cesareans that are so widespread, and that is, I think, you know, there's something about the longer childbirth, the birth labor, the contractions, the pressure through the birth canal, and so forth, that can last anywhere from, you know, a few minutes, a couple hours to 50 hours. There's something about that that serves as a kind of, you know, it's a powerful threshold that has to be met in the process of overcoming the separation between self and world that is in the foundations for which are kind of laid in that powerful perinatal process. And in my experience, it seems to me that the generations that have been born with very large percentage through cesarean births often have there's more of a first of all, there's often a readier, faster access to transpersonal material, to other dimensions of the deep psyche of the unconscious that are not perinatal, and that put one in touch with realities and dimensions of being that are somehow a little bit more accessible, because the boundaries are a little bit more permeable. Also, the boundaries between individuals. I think the extent to which we see the social media in our time bringing forth a type of almost like a communal identity or more diffuse identity and multiple identities, compared to that, the somewhat more secluded, isolated, buffered self, to use Charles Taylor's term, of the modern identity that came out of the Cartesian Renaissance, Reformation, Scientific Revolution, the whole modern development helped constellate quite a buffered self with respect to other individuals, more individualistic, and with respect to the rest of the natural world. And I think that greater permeability of psyche and of identity that we see today probably has something to do with the very large numbers of individuals who are having a different kind of birth process, with both potentially helpful and potentially challenging consequences, as almost every development in cultural history and in our personal histories tends to have that ambiguity, that there's both shadow and light with everything. And so I hope that this response helps give a little bit what Stan said and what I said help give a little more frame of reference for how what we'll be doing here may be of use to people who have had that kind of birth or who have children who have had cesarean births.
Hey, wow, you know, thank you. That's a lot of food for thought. Go for it, Stan.
Can I add something?
Yes, absolutely.
Rick said the alarming increase of cesarean section. We've had opportunity to spend some time in South America. And there was, for example, one situation where Fritjof Capra, Rupert Sheldrake, and myself went and did a weekend seminar in Buenos Aires. And it was new approaches to physics, new approaches to biology, new approaches to psychology. And there was a fascinating discussion. And we found out that the rate of cesarean sections was 75%. You should know much more about the impact of that kind of birth before we would deliver three out of four children with a cesarean section. It has, you know, all kinds of negative influences, as well as the fact that it makes the birth easier for a mother, and it seems to be easier for the baby, but it isn't. There are other things that then what I already talked about, that they certain stamina develop in that birth process, but also, for example, in cesarean babies, breathing is not stimulated, so they have much more breathing problems afterwards, and it also interferes with the relationship between the mother and the child. So I think we really should know much more before we really allow that kind of trend to happen.
Interesting. Just so interesting. We could talk for hours about this one topic alone. Let me go ahead and go on to some questions, though, here. This is a compilation of many questions. A lot of people are asking the same things. So the questions are, does the course give reference as to how to learn or do astrology? Because there are all kinds of astrology, and they're wondering what kind this course uses. And will people be working on their own personal charts? And what if they don't have access to their birth time?
Okay. I think I can address those questions. This is in this particular course, which is 8 sessions long, and part of the course will involve the depth psychology component that Stan in particular will be setting forth in a couple of the sessions, as well as the integration with the archetypal astrological perspective, which the rest of the sessions will, or the modules will be focused on. And I would say at the end of these 8 sessions, one's perspective, I believe, will be greatly expanded. One will have tools to be able to explore and more deeply understand oneself through the understanding of one's birth chart. It would be too much to say that one will emerge from this one course as a master of astrology. Of course, any deep subject matter requires much, you know, plenty of deep focus. But this will give a foundation for that kind of concentrated effort that to become a master would require. Let me say something while I think of it. The issue about not having a birth time. And that will lead to another part of these questions, which is what particular form of astrology will we be looking at? Because indeed, just as with psychology, there's many different schools, and we will be discussing a real integration of a number of schools of psychology, depth psychology in general, but psychoanalysis, Jungian psychology, archetypal psychology, and transpersonal psychology being especially pivotal. But in terms of the astrology, this is particularly called archetypal astrology because of its focus on the planetary archetypes and the understanding of archetypes. It comes in our own time, or in this past 100 years, through particularly the use of the term, the recovery and development of the term of archetype by Carl Gustav Jung and Jungian psychology, then developed further by many, including James Hillman, did brilliant work with, and in particular in the school of archetypal psychology per se. But it's also drawing on the longer astrological tradition coming out of not only Western, but the Hellenistic and ancient Mesopotamian astrological traditions that eventually influenced both Western and Indian Vedic astrology. And it is an archetypal perspective, which is at the root of it. There's a Platonic, the Platonic idea of archetypes is central. The idea that there are many beautiful things or people or experiences in the world, but there is one archetypal principle of the beautiful, capital B, the very principle of beauty that is in some sense transcends time, space, but is present in any particular local temporal expression of beauty or of love or whatever happens to be the particular quality and archetypal domain we're talking about. So the type of astrology we're dealing with, and one of the reasons that we're able to present this in a form that within a relatively few number of sessions, one can begin to get a decent grasp of the fundamentals, is has the major focus is on the alignments, that is to say, the major aspects like the conjunction or the opposition, the square, etc. These alignments of the planets and their relationship to the archetypal principles that the planets seem to be seem to have this core cosmic correspondence to, as if the great archetypal principles that are the fundaments of the deep psyche, as understood by Jung and Joseph Campbell and Marie-Louise von Franz and Marion Woodman or Stan Grof, as if those archetypal essences that inform every human psyche and the collective human psyche seem to be embedded in the cosmos itself, an anima mundi. And so the recognition of what planetary aspects are in existence, which planets are in alignment with each other in the birth chart, and then again in terms of the moving personal transits that shift from day to day, year to year, that is the major focus of the course. And so there's a kind of elegant simplicity to this focus on just the planetary archetypes and their relationships, their dynamics, and understanding them in terms of the birth chart, personal transits, and then what we call world transits, that is where the planets are now or any given time as these reflect the archetypal dynamics of the larger collective. So in terms of having a birth time, while having a birth time is certainly very valuable, it's not mandatory to get a great deal of insight into one's birth chart, into one's life, biography, because in the course of a day, all the planets except and the sun will only move approximately at most 1 degree. Sometimes Mercury will move up to about 2 degrees when it's moving very fast. But generally, all the planets are moving less than 1 degree per day. And in fact, the outer planets are moving hardly at all from day to day, very, very much more slowly. And as a result, where the planets were for that day, if you know your birth date and place, then if you have no idea of the birth time, then you would calculate a birth chart for noon, and that would give us the best margin of error, because it could only be 12 hours on either side maximum that it would be different. And the only thing that really moves in terms of the planetary aspects is the moon. The moon moves between 12 and 15 degrees a day. And so the moon, we would only know within about 6 or 7 degrees of exact alignment where it was, which is still something. And then you wouldn't know what planets are rising or setting or at the midheaven at the time of your birth, because that and what are called house positions, as the planets move through the heavens each day as the Earth turns, well, that you would not know. So you wouldn't know the house positions. You'd know the signs, but you wouldn't know the house positions. and you wouldn't know exactly what was rising and setting. Those are very helpful pieces of information that we wouldn't have. But you are getting what I would regard as about 80 to 85% of the information that we find to be the most significant in understanding the individual psyche and its unfolding through time. In terms of our research, it's just having the birth date and therefore most of the major planetary alignments and their positions to within 1 degree are known. And that's a tremendous amount of information that's useful for us to have. So I've worked with many individuals who only have a birth date, and sometimes they may have the morning or the evening or something like that, close to midnight, but not know exactly when. Well, any information helps us narrow it down. One last thing, and that is a great deal of extraordinary correlation has been discovered through our research on major historical figures, cultural figures, for whom we don't have the birth time. Like, we don't have Beethoven's birth time, though we know his birth date. But just having his birth date is tremendously valuable. I'm accustomed to working particularly with that kind of situation. I might just finally add one other thing, and that is getting a good reading from one or ideally more than one excellent astrologer will be a very valuable adjunct to this course, a complement to it. It'll help one go much more deeply into the process of understanding. And I can make some recommendations in the course of the seminar.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. And if you're just joining us, we're here with Dr. Stanislav Grof and Dr. Richard Tarnas, learning about their upcoming course, Psyche and Cosmos, which begins on Tuesday, October 3rd. And you can log on to psycheandcosmos.com for all the details and to register. So let's get back to the questions. We've got them piling up here. This is a question from Roger, and he's referencing the conversation that you had with Stephen Dynan last week. He says, you spoke last time of archetypal astrology giving us insight into the soul of the world. How do you understand that term, and how do you see it functioning in a way that we can recognize?
Well, the idea of the I'll answer since I used that term in our interview with Steve. Soul of the world is the English translation for a Latin phrase, anima mundi. And anima mundi is an important term. It comes out of the Platonic ancient Greek tradition, and it was revived in our lifetimes, or many of our lifetimes, by James Hillman with his very famous paper that he wrote and delivered on a number of occasions called Anima Mundi, The Return of the Soul to the World. And in that paper, he argued that a focus on just the subjective experience of a human being, as if interiority, psychological qualities, emotions, meaning, the striving for purpose and so forth, as if these were something that just lived inside the cranium of the human being, is a therapeutically self-limiting and in many ways extremely problematic way of understanding psychology. In fact, he made clear that there's a kind of built-in limit of how far you can go to try to heal the soul in a world that is seen by the modern mainstream disenchanted perspective as being fundamentally soulless, without intrinsic meaning or purpose. And I think he particularly brought up the extent to which we are just blinding ourselves and deaf and keeping ourselves deaf to the expressions of soul in the rest of the world that, for example, primal individuals would be. Indigenous traditions and the tribal peoples have an alertness to the movements of the birds and the and animals and the air, the ocean, the river. These are imbued with meaning. They have soul. Soul is just not a human property. There is a capacity of interiority. Now, this very much fits in to many of the, I think, of the most interesting and progressive scientific theories of our time within understanding of animal behavior, ethology, but also our understanding of biology and biological evolution more generally, going right back to cellular modes of what seem to be sentience. And this is a movement that sees the so-called hard problem of modern cognitive science and philosophy. The hard problem was called that by David Chalmers because there's been no way of understanding how we could go from just purely material substrate of the brain to the qualitative experience of human consciousness and that vivid, what's most intimate in our daily lives in every moment is our consciousness, our awareness, our emotions, our sentience. And yet there's no way of understanding the exact translation between our the physical brain and matter to the psychological soul qualities. And from the kind of perspective that's emerging in philosophy and in many scientific thinkers as well, is a view that's called panpsychic or pan-experiential, in which all being has sentience and that all being has both external and internal qualities. Alfred North Whitehead is perhaps the leading philosophical figure in this understanding, but there are many, many others who are carrying this forward. So this is something that's happening on many levels. The Gaia hypothesis is part of it in its more expanded form. And in general, what our research that we'll be presenting to you in this course represents is a recognition that the movements of the planets themselves, the entire macrocosm, seems to be, in some sense, ensouled. It seems to be expressive of archetypal principles that are psychologically profoundly meaningful to human beings, and that, in fact, the movements of the planets with respect to the moving Earth suggests a kind of suggests that the Earth, as well as each individual, is a participating, moving center of cosmic meaning in the larger scheme of things, and that we're not this isolated speck of soul in a soulless universe, but rather we are a form of the ensouled universe that has a particular kind of consciousness and is in a, I think, a powerful transformational moment in our evolution in which we can find our, potentially go through a kind of death-rebirth process that allows us to come into an intimate, co-creative relationship, an I-thou relationship with the rest of the ensouled universe. So hopefully those reflections are of some help in answering that question.
Lisa, if I can add some observations
yes,
from
psychedelic
sessions and from holotropic breathwork and also study of people who are in spontaneous episodes of non-ordinary states, what we call spiritual emergency. There came a very, very fascinating observation there, Jay, that in these non-ordinary states of consciousness, we can identify experientially with other people. We can have experience of a group of individuals. Not, for example, identification with mothers of the world or children of the world. And then it doesn't stop with the human species. We can have experiences of identification with animals, with an eagle, with a whale, with a caterpillar turning into a butterfly. And we can have even experiences of plants. For example, I had an experience of becoming a Venus flytrap, a carnivorous plant in the process of digesting a fly. And it came with all the very complicated experiences, something that I couldn't come up with in my ordinary fantasy. And then it goes further. There's a possibility of an experience of what seems to be a consciousness of a diamond, consciousness of granite. And the transpersonal experiences can also go into the Jungian collective unconscious. When we can have an experience of becoming an archetypal being or encountering an archetypal being or visiting various archetypal realms. So that in the light of these transpersonal experiences, consciousness is on a certain level is undivided. Any kind of boundaries seem to be arbitrary, something that can be transcended. It means that everything that in everyday life we experience as an object has in these non-ordinary states a subjective counterpart. It can become a sequoia tree, for example. And this is what Rick said, it shows that the universe is radically ensouled. Consciousness is associated with a variety of processes from humans down to inorganic matter. And this is today supported by observations from quantum relativistic physics. For example, Stuart Hameroff initially had the idea that consciousness may be generated by quantum processes in the tubules inside of the cells, and later changed it and said that he now believes that consciousness, at least in the form of what he called proto-consciousness, can be traced all the way back to the Big Bang. So the whole concept of anima mundi is systematically supported from these observations from non-ordinary states related to what we call transpersonal experiences.
Wow. Thank you, Stan, for adding that. Before we go any further, I'm looking at the clock here. We have time for one or two more questions, but before we take those, I want to give a few details about Psyche and Cosmos. This is going to be a fascinating, life-changing 8-week journey under Dr. Groff's and Dr. Tarnas's expert guidance, where you'll access the wisdom of archetypal astrology to deepen your self-understanding and saturate your life with greater beauty, meaning, and purpose. This 8-week course takes place on Tuesdays at noon Pacific, starting Tuesday, October 3rd. And if for any reason you can't join us live, that's fine. You won't miss the teachings. You will receive video recordings, transcripts, and all course handouts on your course homepage. And also, I'd like to remind you that we offer a no-risk money-back guarantee on our courses, giving a full 2 weeks until October 17th in this case, to make sure that you absolutely love it. And as an added option, all participants are welcome to connect in a private Facebook community group so you can stay connected with one another. Also, everyone who registers receives the Psyche and Cosmos bonus collection. First, you'll receive a video dialogue with Stan Groff, Albert Hoffman, and Tav Sparks with an appearance by Hans Giger entitled A Discussion with Albert Hoffman. Then you'll get a set of two audio dialogues with Rick Tarnas and Caroline Casey called Cosmos and Psyche. Also, you'll receive an audio interview with Stan Grof, hosted by Lori Schwanbeck, entitled The Value of Non-Ordinary States of Consciousness for Individuals in Human Society. Next, you'll get a video with Stan Grof and Rick Tarnas called The Use of Archetypal Astrology in Psychedelic Therapy and Holotropic Breathwork. And when you register by midnight Pacific on Monday, September 25th, you'll receive an additional bonus gift, and that's an audio interview with Rick Tarnas, hosted by Lori Schwanbeck, entitled Finding Our Center in the Postmodern Universe. So before we go any further, Stan and Rick, what are you both most looking forward to sharing in your upcoming course?
Well, for me, I would like to communicate that we found archetypal astrology an absolutely invariable tool in consciousness research. That concept of archetypal astrology being Rosetta Stone of consciousness research came from me after years of attempts to use the traditional psychological test to predict what might happen in psychedelic sessions or understanding what happens in psychedelic session. It was archetypal astrology that turned out to be that amazing tool. And the irony was that it was something that was even more controversial than psychedelics themselves. But fortunately, we found an extremely open-minded school, Institute of Integral Studies, California Institute of Integral Studies, that allowed us to teach courses that would be actually a combination of those two, psychedelics and archetypal astrology, and actually became something very popular among the students. There's a large following people who have been through Rick's and some of our combined courses in Psyche and Cosmos. It's really a large club now of people who follow everything that happens every day in the world and discuss whether the astrological correlations seem to be relevant and to what extent it is possible to either predict events or explain events after they happened astrologically. I have not encountered in psychology and psychiatry any tool that would come close to the usefulness of archetypal astrology.
I could add something to that, Stan and Lisa, and that would simply be, I think, the biggest a motivation for doing this form of course that's new for us is that it's just an opportunity to share something that we have been teaching and sharing over quite a few years now. I mean, really over 30 years. It was 40 years ago last year that that the research first started exploding, and we got the basic picture within those first couple of years. But we've been teaching it for, you know, most of that time, certainly 35 years, and then in graduate seminars for some 25 years. And this is an opportunity to reach a much more international public that where they don't have to come and travel to be with us in San Francisco, nor would we be traveling to their particular town or city. It's just an opportunity to reach a lot of people in a shorter time. We don't know, you know, Stan and I are, Stan's in his 80s, I'm in my later 60s. We're grateful to have our lucidity and intellectual stamina and energy with us at this time, and hope we have it for years to come, but we don't take it for granted. And so the idea of being able to present this material in a way that could be accessible to a wider number of people is important to us personally. And then I think, you know, hopefully the people who are able to join us in this particular program will experience the kind of enrichment that we have seen others have and describe in their lives. And we are glad to be able to pass on the treasure.
Perfect. Thank you. Let me go to a question here. This is a couple different people are asking about this, specifically about new constellations and zodiac signs showing up. So let's go to the specific question. Cal wants to know, I thought I was a Sagittarius for most of my life, and then they discovered Ophiuchus, and I fall into that range. Do both signs work for me, or do I need to choose one or the other?
Yeah. The whole idea of the zodiac is that, you know, there's a 360 degree as the apparent, the ecliptic, which is the apparent path of the sun across the sky in the course of a year, which is, of course, the Earth's revolution around the sun. As it does that, there are stars in the distance, and those stars formed constellations in the ancient imagination. That is, they formed figures like, you know, Gemini, the twins, or Leo, the lion, and Taurus, the bull. And actually, when you see some of these signs, like the constellations, when you see the Taurus constellation or Leo constellation, you really can see what they were. The stars are vivid. They do have a kind of simple evocation of the figure involved. Others are more obscure. But there's nothing in that 360-degree circle of the ecliptic that is kind of rigidly separated into 30-degree segments in the sky. The 12 signs of the zodiac emerged in the ancient period, about 2,000-3,000 years ago, and there's a certain arbitrariness as to where one puts the point of where one sign ends and the next begins, the one constellation. And so because there are other stars that can appear to constellate in other constellations in any given perception, you can give a name to it as that 13th sign has. A further complexity to this issue is the fact that there's been a precession of the equinoxes, so that the first day of spring, which is when most contemporary Western astrologers time wherever the sun is on the first day of spring, that's 0 degrees Aries. But that point in the heavens has actually moved degree after degree every century, so that in the course of the last couple thousand years, there's been a move across an entire sign, so that what was in Aries is now in Pisces and about to move into Aquarius, that particular point. And as a result, there's these two different zodiacs called the tropical zodiac, which is what most Western astrologers use, basing the first day of spring, 0 degrees Aries, on where the sun is on the first day of spring. And then the sidereal zodiac, which is where the stars are, where the signs are literally. And that's used particularly in Vedic astrology and in anthroposophical astrology, coming out of Steiner's work, and a number of others as well. The best solution I have to this conundrum was set out by a man named Charles Harvey, president of the British Astrological Association, back in the 1980s. And he wrote a very insightful paper where he argued, I think quite persuasively, that each zodiac has its own dimension of relevance, its own kind of arena of significance and mode of significance, so that the two zodiacs used in Vedic astrology and then in Western, tropical and sidereal, each have their own validity, and it's worth exploring those meanings in both cases. We, in this particular course, are not actually going to be focusing on the signs. We're focusing on the planetary aspects, which are, that is, the alignments, which are valid and the same no matter what zodiac you're using. Because if, you know, just like when the sun is opposite the moon with respect to the earth, that's a full moon for everybody. It doesn't matter what zodiac you're in or what signs they're in. It's a full moon. Well, that's an opposition, and just like an opposition between any other two planets or a conjunction or a square, those are going to be valid no matter what signs we call them. And that's why, that's one of the great kind of elegant simplicities of this form of archetypal astrology that we'll be presenting, is that it allows us to we bracket the whole issue of the signs and put all the focus on what we found to be the most significant for understanding psychological therapeutic experiences, non-ordinary states of consciousness, also the great collective dynamics of world transits, such as, you know, the 1960s or the French Revolution or our own era, those kinds of cultural and psychological areas of study, in our estimation, seem to be most clearly illuminated by a focus on the planetary alignments, or what's called the major aspects. And so while the zodiacal signs are definitely worth exploring, that complexity and choices that you were talking about does not have to be addressed here in this particular course.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, this has just been a fascinating hour. I want to thank our viewers for being with us today and for all of your fascinating questions. There are way more than we can get to today. And also, thank you to Stan and Rick for sharing your expertise with us. Psyche and Cosmos starts Tuesday, October 3rd. And again, you can visit psycheandcosmos.com to learn more and to register. And before we go, Stan, Rick, do you have any final words for our listeners?
Stan, do you want to start?
Well, I'm looking forward to working with Rick. Rick started way back as my student, and then as we worked together, we became colleagues, and then I started learning a lot from him, and he's really one of my most important intellectual influences. So I'm looking forward to another opportunity for cooperation. And I have to say that over the years, in all the courses, whether they were courses in the different schools, transpersonal schools, in seminars, workshops, or in these teleseminars, I have also learned and got a lot of stimulation and inspiration from the reactions of the people who were part of those courses, and I learned a lot from the kind of questions that they were asking. And I hope that is going to continue.
Well, I'll just add to that, Stan, that Stan's certainly been one of my most important influences in every regard. No way I can repay that debt. And it's just been a great joy to collaborate in all our co-teaching, and this is another great opportunity for me. But in addition, I want to mention that and all those unanswered or the questions that we weren't able to get to today, we will be having Q&A sessions throughout the 8 weeks. So that will be a further opportunity to address these lingering issues. And then in if they aren't already responded to and answered in the course of what we're presenting. But in addition, I thought I would just mention that we're going that, I mean, for me, the great value of this course has to do with, on the one hand, helping us to get a kind of handle on it's like a light that we can carry into an otherwise obscure area of the unconscious, of unconscious forces and factors that are influencing our day-to-day experience, our biographical unfolding, but also the collective psyche, which we see so dramatically in our lifetimes go through almost like possession states where something something seems to be in the air or in the water. And I believe that's it's illuminated more dramatically by recognizing what archetypal complexes have been constellated in any given time for the collective, for the world, or for ourselves than any other method that I know of. And that light is just invaluable. So to be able to share this as a way of having greater self-understanding, allowing greater consciousness, greater in capacity to interact mindfully, skillfully with the flow of life is just such an invaluable tool, which we're very happy to be sharing with others. And it also does help all of us, I think, open up to the fact that there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in our old philosophy, that we live in a deep unfolding mystery, our cosmic matrix that we exist in is unfolding in such mysterious and exciting ways that we are somehow at a pivotal position to be following and participating in. And so the material that we'll be presenting here could, I believe will, help us be able to glimpse that larger worldview that our world very much needs in order to move into a new era.
Exactly. Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Dr. Stanislav Grof and Dr. Richard Tarnas. This has been a fascinating conversation. Thanks for both of you for your input today.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity. It's quite unique. Thank you.
And I want to thank everybody who joined us today. Those of you sending in your questions, they were wonderful. Great conversation. On behalf of all of us at the Shift Network, I wish you well and look forward to having you on this course or perhaps another one in the future. Have a great day, everyone.